You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Jennifer Howes. On this week's show...
So when I was younger, girls used to come up and go, I love you. Now they come up and say, my nan loves you. My grandma loves you.
But before all of that... Hello, hello. Welcome to another NetMums podcast, folks. Thanks for joining us. Now, today's guest has actually met me before. And I guarantee that he won't remember... I think we might even almost still be neighbours. So before he hangs up because he thinks I'm a stalker, I'm going to let Jen introduce him and then I will explain my randomness. Jen, tell us who we have joining us today.
Yes. Good morning, Wendy. This week, we are delighted to have with us Peter Andre, who even after your very interesting intro, I feel like is someone who almost needs no introduction. He's a TV personality and singer celebrating 30 years in entertainment. He's written songs with Gary Barlow and Ricky Wilson, appeared on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here and Strictly Come Dancing. He has two children, Junior and Princess, from his marriage to Katie Price, and Amelia and Theo with his doctor wife, Emily. Peter even has a new series of children's picture books that have a very sweet feature, which we'll be talking about in a bit. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, that was a nice intro. Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned the 30-year celebration rather than the big birthday I've got this year, because the thing is, in about 3 or 4 weeks, I'm going to be 50 years old. And I've always tried to avoid it, celebrating being in the entertainment industry. I'm focusing on the 30 because it sounds better than 50. That's the way I look at it.
Now, I'm guessing you don't remember me, Peter.
Talk to me.
You wouldn't be expected to. So I'm not going to explain where this happened, but I don't even know if you still live in this place. But a couple of years ago, I saw you in boots in a place, in a little village, in a place where you once lived, where I live. And we were both buying Calpol for our children. And we had a little chat about the fact that, God, they're always ill. And then we went our separate ways with our Calpol. So there we go.
My daughter's ill today.
As is mine.
Although Calpol and YouTube seem to work hand in hand, don't they? It's like, if you give them Calpol on its own, they're still sick. But all of a sudden, when you give them YouTube, oh, they're fine now.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Now, I have to be honest, I don't remember that encounter. But I promise you, I will never forget this encounter.
Oh, he's a smooth bastard. Listen to him. So, 30 years since Drive Me Crazy, that first single. There are, as far as I'm aware, there's all sorts of cool stuff planned for the tour. Meet and greets, music, competitions, memorabilia. How do you feel about this crazy business of 30 years in celebrity?
Well, I think I feel really lucky because I know, and I'm sure anyone in this industry knows, that to last that long, to even be standing after all these years is, you know, it's an achievement. I remember being a kid and I remember looking at all the big stars that I loved on TV, like Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder and Prince and Madonna. And I used to think, wow, you know, these guys are so successful. And then many years later, sadly, a lot of them, you know, things happen and bad things happen and they, you know, some of them are not with us anymore. And then you sort of sit back and you think, God, you know, for all the people that you've admired and loved, and if it wasn't for them, you would never have even wanted to get into this world. You know, when I think about, and Dad says to me, you know, how do you feel about being able to do all those things that you wanted to do? And did you ever want to get bigger than you did? And did you ever want to do this? And I said, Dad, when I look at myself now and I think that I'm still going to the gym, I'm going to be 50 years old, feel great. I do all the things that I want to do. That to me is the achievement. It's not about trying to be the best. It's not about, you know, you'll never reach the heights of some of those legends. So you've got to just be grateful that you've made it through, you know, basically.
Well, that kind of chimes with something I read about this impending older celebration this year, the 50 rather than the 30. That you'd said that you weren't going to do a huge, big blowout with celebrities and decadence. Tell us how you do plan to celebrate.
Okay, so I'll tell you how this all happens. I'm going to go back 10 years when I turned 40. And I remember dreading turning 40. I was in my 30s thinking, you know, 30s young, 40s old. It isn't, by the way, for anyone listening. 40s are fantastic. But when I celebrated my 40th birthday, it was a sort of a surprise party for me. But I'd only just lost my brother a few weeks before. And I remember being there, should be happy. You know, people have gone to all that effort to give me a surprise party. And I remember how sad I felt. And I remember how I didn't enjoy one minute of it. And I remember, you know, saying, oh, I'm just going to go to the bathroom. And I'd go in there and I'd pull my eyes out. And I remember thinking to myself after that, I didn't really want to celebrate birthdays. It just didn't. I don't know why. I love celebrating my kids' birthdays. I love celebrating my wife's birthdays. But for me, the thought of a big party and a big celebration just doesn't excite me. Now, to go away with my family, to go away with my wife, you know, go somewhere beautiful and hot, yes.
Well, you've just got back, haven't you? Just got back from Australia.
Yeah, so we went to visit my mum and dad because mum's not very well. So we went out there and spent, it was only about 10 days, but we managed to spend some really, really good quality time with them. But then now that it's the birthday, I thought, wouldn't it be nice to just all of us just go somewhere where we don't know anybody and just have a few days together. So that's my way of celebrating it. But everyone thinks I'm mad not having a birthday party. And I said, guys, I'm 50 for a whole year, so I'll just do little bits throughout the year. Why not?
Are you saying there are plenty more parties to be had?
So there's so many things going on this year. I've set myself so many goals, which my wife said I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself, but I'm like, no, I've got to do it. The first one being we're doing 5 shows and I've picked 5 places. They're small, they're intimate. And the reason I've done it is because I'm trialing out something I've never done before. So it's not a concert. It's not a sit down and do a Q&A. It's nothing like that. What it is I've employed a very dear friend of mine who was the man behind Thriller in the West End. And I've asked him for us to create my life, but in a theatre form. So there's a couple of people that have done this. I think Bruce Springsteen did this in America. There was another country singer that's done it in America, huge success. Gary Barlow's done a similar thing with a different stage. And what it is it's a bit of acting, it's a bit of music, it's a bit of, you know, lights that can tell a story and transport you to when I was 6 years old and immigrate into Australia. And we'll be able to tell a story, but through music, through words, through visuals. And so that way it's going to be something very unique. And whoever comes to these first 5 shows will be part of something that's just being created and that we plan to tour for years. So that's the first thing we're doing. And there are 5 dates. And I don't know if you have all the information, but you go to peterandre30.com and you can get your tickets. And I honestly say, come and be part of something really unique. And it's for all ages. And so I think it's going to be brilliant. And with the help of Gary Lloyd, I know we're going to create some magic. And even to the days of when I was such a huge Michael Jackson fan, you know, we'll incorporate bits where I transport myself to being him in front of the mirror and with the lighting and the effects, and then back into the room of me being just a little kid with a dream. It's something very unique. And then I'll do an album for the first time in 10 years, just because I want to tour it. And then we'll do a music tour later, probably next year or later this year. So a year of loads of things.
I wanted to follow up on something to do with the tour and the show. There's even a competition. Well, one thing is there's people who buy tickets, they get an NFT, which seems, I won't go on and on about that. And for those who don't know about NFTs, they won't be interested. For those who do, they'll know. But that's a really kind of modern element to it. And there's even a competition in which fans can win a personal video call with you. I mean, it just sounds so fun. But it did make me wonder, what are the kinds of things that fans tend to want to know when they see you or approach you in the public, other than asking you about Cowpaw?
Yeah, my knowledge would have been low about Cowpaw, by the way, and I probably would have been picking your brain going, what is she getting? Is she getting? What age does it play on? I'm terrible with these things. So first of all, just to really be brief about an NFT, for anyone that doesn't know, it's just basically a digital piece of art. And that's a kind of a a very easy way of explaining it. And what you can do with it is you can sell it on, and each piece of art is so unique so that you only have that version of this digital art. So if you go on to sell it in years to come, and you know, if anyone's interested, and then they can sell it and you can retain a percentage. And it's just something that's becoming so massive in America, and I want to get in early. And instead of saying to people, buy my NFTs, because most people would be like, what is that? We're going to give it away to everyone that gets a ticket. We're going to give them a unique piece of this digital art. And then hopefully in years to come, I don't know if it'll be worth anything, but hopefully they can, you know, go on and do what they want with it. So that's that.
It'll certainly be worth something quite special to commemorate that event.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be unique to that event. So I think that in itself is just a way of us starting to give back, because I think for 30 years, I walk down the street, I meet so many lovely people. People are so generous. They always come up. They always talk. We have conversations as if we've known each other for years, like about Cowpole and stuff. And for me, it's not about just going and doing something and saying, oh, come and watch this. And, you know, we want to make people part of it. We want to make everyone that comes to see these first five part of what this bigger picture is going to be. So, yeah. So that's that. What was the other question you asked me?
The question was, what kinds of things do fans most want to know when they come up to you?
First of all, times have changed. So when I was younger, girls used to come up and go, I love you. Now they come up and say, my nan loves you. My grandma loves you. But then the new generation, a lot of the younger ones come up and they'll either ask me questions about my kids a lot, about Junior and Princess, especially the girls ask a lot about Junior.
No surprise there. Also, he makes music as well. So he's got his own fan base, hasn't he? So,
well, actually, one time we were doing his video clip for a song called Slide. And I was standing there and this girl ran, young girl, and she pushed past me. She went up to Junior and she's like, oh my God, handed me the phone, had, you know, no idea I was his dad. And she said, excuse me, can you take a picture of me and Junior? And I said, yeah, sure. And I started laughing because Junior's looking at me as if to say, my turn, dad. So I'm taking pictures. And then this other lady comes up and goes, oh, hello, Junior. Right. I don't know if I did the accent right. Hello, Junior. Lisa, don't be so rude. Don't disturb the man. And then she looks at me, who's holding the camera, and she goes, oh my God, Peter Andre. And then she said to her daughter, she handed the phone over and said, now take a picture of me and Pete. And this was the fun thing, is the generation gap and how I'm known to the young generation for Junior and for some of the stuff maybe I've done. So they ask us all sorts of things like, I don't know, what's it like parenting teenager to, you know, how does it feel that you're getting old? That's a beauty, that one.
Do you know what, though? It's interesting because I was telling my daughter who's off sick is 11, and I was telling her that we were chatting to you today, and she didn't know who you were, but she knew your songs. Because I said to her, play this song. Do you know that? Oh, yeah, I know that. Play that one. Do you know that? Oh, yeah. So this is the guy. No, never seen him.
But you know what is interesting? I actually ask, because I try to prove this point to people, that how times have changed, even on TV and things like that. I asked two kids the other day, do you know who David Beckham was? And they said, no. And I asked another two children, they were about 11, do you know who Anton Deck is? And they said, no. And I thought, now, one's from sport, who's a celebrity, and one's from TV, and they didn't know who they were. And I said, oh, do you watch TV? And they said, no, I watch YouTube and I watch, you know, whatever. So times have changed. And for someone not to know who David Beckham is, that made me feel a little bit better, by the way. But also, I did a voiceover for a character in Thomas the Tank Engine called Ace. And it was for the film that went around the world. So I have kids come up to me and their dad goes, that's Ace. And kids come up going, oh my God, you're Ace. Can I have a picture? So that's cute as well. You know, it's got nothing to do with music or anything else.
Well, it interests me very much that you have hosted Miss World.
Yes.
It fascinates me. I dreamed of being in pageants when I was young. I think, you know, they have their critics and sometimes they can feel a little retro, but they also look like such fun. And of course, the people, the women who take part, they're very accomplished and have done so much. So tell me, What was that like?
Unbeknownst to a lot of people, I am now the host for Miss World. I have been for 3 years, and I'm the running host now, which is amazing. And another thing that British people may not realize is that Miss World is viewed by 2 billion people each year. So it's the biggest gig I could ever do, and I'm hosting it live. But here's the thing about it. Because I speak a lot of words in different languages. So when I meet someone from India, you know, I'd say namaste, and we would start talking about things, or someone from Thailand, and I'd say, like, you know, kap kun ka, or if it's someone from Korea, annyeonghaseyo. So I can bring these things up, and it breaks the ice because we start talking a little bit in their language. But here's the thing that a lot of people may not know about Miss World, that they cancelled the whole swimsuit part of Miss World. And instead of it being focused on someone's looks, it became about what you've achieved and what you've accomplished. So, you know, some of these girls who were, of course, had the looks and the beauty, but they may have done incredible charity work, and they may be scholars. You know, there's a whole range to them. They have to have accomplished a lot of things to be part of it. And so that's why it's still a huge show, but it's not mainstream, say, in the UK as it used to be in the 80s or 90s. Great show to host, great fun, great to be part of it, great atmosphere. And I love doing, you know, that sort of thing is amazing.
I would imagine there's some dads listening who wonder quite why you love doing that. It can't be awful to be stood amongst all of these supremely talented, wonderful women.
It absolutely can't. But I tell you something about that. My wife's a doctor, right? And I said to her, isn't it a bit weird when you have to sort of do things medically, or you have to see someone, you know, medically or whatever? They say, no, you just see it as a job. You don't look at it. Now, I know that sounds odd, and guys are going to go, yeah, right. But actually, when I'm doing such a big gig like that, your focus is you better not mess this up live on air. So all I care about is that. And I'm like, hello, hello, hello. I'm like super focused. So I'm actually a bit boring and probably the right guy to do it because I stick to that side of it, but also a bit the wrong guy because I don't join all the parties and all that sort of stuff.
Well, I'm going to take you back to family life now, Peter. You're married to an NHS doctor. You've got a blended family, 4 kids. But you kind of appear on, at least on Instagram, and I know that is just on Instagram, to have got this blended family lark totally nailed. So what pearls of wisdom, I guess, can you share about parenting teens versus younger primary school age children? How do you make that work?
So the first thing I say is get yourself a good coffee machine. Honestly, the difference that each child wants is unbelievable. The demands that each child has. Now, I hope that they've been brought up respectfully enough to not be too demanding and to be a little bit kind of independent. But and Junior is a, you know, great kid. He's 17, and yeah, you know, he's a typical teenager, but he's very respectful. And I'm like, son, you need to help out with this. If you're going to eat, you've got to go and put your stuff in the dishwasher, because if you don't, what's going to happen is I'll do it because I'm your dad, but when I'm not there and Emily walks past, she's going to end up doing it. She's got work. We've got work. And I talk to them like that, and they get it. They don't argue it. So they kind of get the bits, and they really are respectful. But then you got the younger ones. I've got a 15-year-old teenage daughter, and don't I know it. I actually quite like her moods because she makes me laugh with them, and we actually end up laughing together when she gets in a mood, because she does what I call rigor mortis. And she starts doing this, and she's like, you know, they start doing all that, right? And she's stiff as a board. But we work through her moods. She's such a nice girl. And then we've got a 9-year-old who's getting really cheeky and answering back. And I'm like, listen, so we have to kind of rein her in on that. And then I've got a 6-year-old who is just a big ball of fluff and always laughing and smiling. And actually all of them I love equally, and all of them are adorable.
And do they get on? Obviously, siblings don't always get on. We all know that. But do obviously they've got different mums. Do they get on as a foursome?
So Princess and Millie are really close, and Junior and Theo are really close. But as a foursome, they're brilliant. The only times I notice it is Junior and Princess used to argue a lot, and they don't now. They're brilliant. And now Millie and Theo argue a lot.
Yeah, that's just siblings though, isn't it? Like, you know, everyone who's got two children knows that just there are times when they just wind each other up and there's nothing you can do apart from make a cup of coffee and leave the room and let them get on with it.
This is it. I get up, I'm thinking, right, they get an hour. I get up an hour before, I go and have my coffee. I sit downstairs. I'm like, this is beautiful. This is peaceful. And then I go, right, I'll go get them now. I'm ready. I've had my coffee. I've had my water. I'm feeling rocking because I have an espresso. So it's a short espresso, bang, water, hydrated, caffeinated, let's go. Then I get them up and then they start going, well, Millie said this through the night. And Millie goes, Theo did this. And then I'm like, I need another coffee. And then we can deal with this. And so it goes. And so it goes like that.
Someone once sent me one of those kind of like little quote postcards that says, coffee keeps me going until it's acceptable to drink wine. And I think that is the way that coffee works.
Right, I like that.
Right, Jen, I think we're going to, there's some picture books going on, Peter.
So just to give people a background, so you're doing this new series of picture books and there's a really nice feature in that I think some of the characters are named after your own children.
So this is a story that I made up for my kids and it was about the different planets and it was always talking about how, you know, for example, this is how it all started. I would be talking about the emerald planet and it was, why is everything on the planet emerald? And, you know, even the grass was emerald, the sky was emerald, the buildings were emerald, the people were emerald, the food was emerald, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then throughout the story, I'd explain that, you know, they would go on this trip and they would go and discover why is everything green and was it a type of food they were eating and et cetera, et cetera. And they would eventually figure it out. And so Millie, the older one, and Theo being her Robin, so she was Batman and he was her Robin kind of thing, they would figure out what the problem was, where all the scientists in the world could never figure this out. And so they'd come back and they'd become superheroes. And then the next planet, you know, whether it was the gray planet or the pink planet or the donut planet, you know, whatever. And so I would tell these over and over again, and the kids have been fascinated for years. And someone from our office had approached Scholastic and said, look, Pete's, you know, he creates these amazing stories for his kids and his kids love it. And they straight away said, not only let's do one book, but we're going to do a series of books. So we've started with this first one, which is Planet Drizzle Bottom. And the reason for that was because it was actually called The Grey Planet at first, but obviously The Grey Planet doesn't appeal in sound. So we decided to, but everything on this planet is grey, everything.
Jen, do you suspect this might have something to do with the amount of coffee he's drinking?
Possibly. I mean, I come up with some weird and wild imaginative things. I mean, this is great because to have a deal like that 30 years later after I started to be creating books that, and so I'm using Millie and Theo as the superheroes and their classmates. And the illustrator, the most bizarre thing is the illustrator has never seen a picture of Millie and Theo because we don't post pictures of them. But somehow they've created the characters. And I said to Emily, they look like Millie and Theo. It's the most bizarre thing. She just somehow has created them exactly what I pictured they would look like in the book. So I've written everything and we've brought in a fantastic illustrator, Katie, who's just fantastic.
They sound so delightful. And I love that they've grown out of stories that you've actually been sharing and creating for your own children. So it's something so lovely and personal, but also you know that kids will love them because they've come directly out of that.
And because I know how fascinated Millie, who's 9, and how fascinated Theo, who's 6, and they were from 4 and six means that the age group is really from 4 till 9, if you know what I mean. It's we could pitch the age group. So this is the first of many. So hopefully, you know, mums can read this to their kids or dads. I think, you know, they'll love it. They'll love the whole, you know, space expedition.
Is it your favourite part of the day, bedtime? Do you love reading stories to the kids or making up stories, as the case may be?
I'm going to be honest here. My favourite part of the day is my bedtime.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, you know, when you get into your bed and you just, there's something that you almost sink, because you just get that relaxed feeling of like, I'm done for the day. I'm done. Now, of course, I love putting them to bed. Emily does too. She's such a hands-on mum. It's unbelievable. So we kind of take things in turns. A lot of times when I'm away working, she will just do the whole run. And then if I come back, I'm like, just let me do it for the week, or, you know, for the next 2 weeks, because it's fair. We share, and the kids want that balance as well.
So, Peter, you mentioned not sharing pictures of your kids. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's like? Obviously, you're a very famous face, but you want to protect your kids from that kind of intrusion or the lack of ability for them to kind of be their own people.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to be honest, this was an Emily decision, and I respect that, because I obviously, the other two, from very young, they were, you know, we did what a lot of parents love to do. You get excited and you want to show your kid riding his bike, or you want to show this awesome photo of your kids, because for me, it's, you're sharing something joyous. But then when Emily, when we had Millie and Theo, and she said, I don't want that, well, I had to respect that. And I understood her reasonings for it. And she's right. She doesn't want them at school to be recognized, or she just wants them to be what she says is normal. And I respect that. But I have to be honest, I probably would have, I can't lie, I probably would have shown pictures as many times when there's the most adorable picture of Millie or Theo, and I'm like, I just wish people could see this. So sometimes when I post pictures, you'll see we blur their face out, or they're facing the back, you know, when they're facing us. And people go, why would you post pictures of them if you don't have their faces? And I said, because the family picture, I'm not going to say to them, step out of the picture so that we can have a whole family. You know, they're part of the family. You know, that is the picture. It's just that we're just not going to show their faces in it. And I have to respect Emily for that. And I would like to take credit and go, well, I thought, but I didn't. I actually probably would have shown them. So,
yeah, I think it's a conversation that you don't have to be famous or recognized for this to be a discussion in families as to how much you share on social media about family life, how much you allow your kids to share. I think it's a really interesting conversation, and you've got that at a kind of heightened level as a celeb.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, because it is funny, because I get why people want to show their kids. They're proud, they're excited, they want to be like, hey, look what my son's done. That's a typical parent thing to want to do. But I also understand the other side, and it's definitely taught me something new. I thought, yeah, I get that. I get why would you want them at school to be looked at different, or to be, so I get it.
But it's also their decision then, isn't it? When they're older, they can choose what they do and don't want to show of themselves, and you don't have any conversations to have about, well, why did you show that picture of me? I don't want you to show that picture of me. You know, when they get to be teenagers, do rigor mortis about it.
You know, has anyone done that? Have any of your kids done that? Where they just,
she's
like,
11 and she's in the other room. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
That.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We mention YouTube or something like that, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm fine now. Yeah, right. Okay. There's another book that we're doing too. I'm so sorry about this, but this is what I mean by 30 years. It's mad. Myself and a guy called Ben Smith, who's a nutritionist, who's lost 10 stone from doing what we have been doing for the last 10 years, which is basically trying to get people away from fad diets, because fad diets, as we know, they work for the time that you're doing them, but they're not sustainable. There are the odd people that can find it sustainable and do manage to go on for years. But generally, 99% of people end up beating themselves up, sabotaging, self-sabotaging themselves. oh, I've screwed up. I've eaten this. I shouldn't have done it.
I might as well have 10 now. Whatever. I've had a biscuit. Now I'm going to have 10.
Yeah. And you're like, you know, I've gone off plan. I've had a sin. All these words that somehow have been put in our brains constantly. And I've lived like this for years where I eat everything. But people might go, well, it's genetics. Well, it's this. Well, no, because Ben, on the other hand, who was 20 something stone, I can't remember how much, he lost 10 stone the first time by going on a traditional diet. Struggled, but he got there. 6 months it took him, and it was painful, but he did it. He did it. And within a very short period of time, he not only put it back on, but he put on more. And so he got to the point where he said, there has to be another way. There has to be a sustainable way. And he started applying this lifestyle. And I'll explain that in a minute. I, on the other hand, was doing the same thing, but I didn't have 20 stone or 10 stone to lose, but I was living this lifestyle. Saw online that this guy was trying to put together this way of teaching people that you can basically eat all the foods you want, and that includes your pizzas and your burgers and your whatever, donuts and whatever, but it's done in a way where you give yourself, there's no daily calorie counting, there's no weighing yourself on the scales, but you give yourself weekly goals. So if you have a blowout day, it doesn't even matter. You don't even think about it. The next day you pull back a bit. You have two blowout days. For the next 2 days, we calm it down a bit. We swap this for this, but then later on you can have that. And it's all this simple way of calories in, calories out, but balancing your food. But we've done it in a way where I said to him, can't we put this in an app? And he said, well, that's exactly what I'm working on. So we created this app called Wine, which is doing very, very well. But now we've signed this book deal means we can share with people and guide them how to live this sustainable way.
When's it out, Peter?
June this year.
Oh, June this year. Okay.
You know, it's on Amazon now to pre-order and stuff, but it's not out till June. So that's another wonderful thing that we're hopefully going to really help with the sort of that industry.
Now, Peter, before we say goodbye to you, I am going to end with her. I was researching yesterday, looking up things about you for our questions, and I came across a headline in The Sun. It says, my manhood is actually the size of a Sky remote.
I did say that, didn't I?
Did you actually say that? Or is that The Sun pretending that you said that? Because it's great.
Years ago, there was, oh man. I mean, if you go back to the jungle days, there was night vision cameras. And obviously we didn't know that because it was one of the first series of I'm a Celebrity. I didn't know anything about it. I was living in Australia and all of a sudden I got called to do this show. And I remember the headline being, from an acorn grows an oak tree. I remember this line and I was super proud. I mean, God, you know what? So then all these years later, there was this, I don't know, I must have been asked things in interviews and I must have said that in an interview somewhere. I don't know. But the point is that years later, it came back to haunt me because then there was all this silly stuff being said in the press about
Chipolatas.
I mean, it's all been a bit of a laugh.
Hey, but if you don't just embrace this and laugh at it, what are you going to do? Right? It's just funny tabloid press stuff.
I joke about a lot of things. I find a sense of humor in most things.
I think it's brilliant. Apps, and it cheered my day up no end yesterday. So thank you, Peter. And thank you for joining us this morning.
You guys have been lovely and thank you. I know I've talked a lot and I do sometimes over talk and it's one of my bad habits, but thank you because it's been actually really nice to talk to you both. Thank you so much.